Better put your boots back on. Outside. Why are you helping me? We're a danger to you. And you'd better believe it. Hey, aren't fathers supposed to grab every minute they can get to spend with their sons? I mean, here you are, taking probably just a short vacation from a federal penitentiary. Clearly, you've gone considerably out of your way to come see your old dad. Narrowing his eyes slightly, Jack said, "You're mildly curious about me." "Sure I am. What with the cops looking high and low for you, we'll have some real quality time together, don't you think?" "You're not sending me out to hunker down in a gully with the other guys." Fletch said, "There's a shower in there." He nodded to the door to the study bathroom. "Fresh towels. Down the hall back of the house, there's a guest room. Closets, bureau drawers, some old clothes of mine, some left by forgetful house guests. While you're showering and changing, I'll go heat up the tuna puffs. You want milk?" "We knocked out your phones way down the road." Fletch shrugged. "Some people around here still believe that when it rains real hard like this, frogs drop out of the sky. When it rains this hard, there certainly are a great many more frogs on the roads. I've noticed that myself." "What are you talking about?" "When I come back, try to look more like a prince, will you? A little less like a frog." The young man tried to smile, but failed. "Why?" "A couple of counties are about to stop by. They want to borrow the jeep to go looking for you and your traveling companions."
"What are counties?"
From the hall outside the study, Fletch said, "Cops." Chapter 3. Pulling off his sneakers as he walked, Fletch went through the kitchen into the small back hall. He stepped into his thigh-high black rubber boots. From a wall peg, he took his wide-brimmed dark brown hat and put it on his head. He buttoned his long brown horse coat to his throat. Knowing himself virtually invisible and inaudible in the night's hard rain, he went out the back door and along the side of the house to the front corner. Outside the French doors, Jack was visible in the study lights, sockless, stamping on his work boots. He crouched to lace them. As Fletch knew he would, Jack went down the front walk, across the road, and along the gravel driveway through the home pasture to the barns. After waiting a moment, Fletch crossed the lawn, the road, and went in a straight line over a whiteboard fence, across the home pasture to the back fence. He sat on the top board of that fence under a tree. From there, even in that rain, even in that dark, he could see movement in the area between the barns and against the back hills. Fletch had learned that if he remained perfectly still, especially sitting, especially if he lowered his head so that his hat was backed by his shoulders, he would not be seen under such circumstances, or at least not be seen as a human. In a moment, a skinny man walked head down between the barns. He was headed in the direction of the gully. He took rapid, short steps. There followed a huge man with a big egg of a head, big chest, big gut. Angrily, he was waving his arms. More visible once backed by the hill, he turned. Shouting something, he ran back a couple of meters. Suddenly, smoothly, a tall, slim, lithe figure ran forward to him and kicked him in the crotch. The lighter man, the boy, cracked the side of his right hand against the egg of the big man's head. The young man's voice came through the pounding rain. "Will you shut up?" Then the young man backed up a meter and postured himself defensively. The fourth man, shorter than all of them, fatter, came into view. Arms akimbo, he stood over the crouching big man. Fletch guessed he was talking to him, exhorting him. While he talked, the lithe young man Fletch knew to be Jack jogged ahead of the first man Fletch had seen, who was hesitating by the gate to the pastures. Jack climbed over the gate. He disappeared across the stream toward the back hill. Stepping on every rung of the gate, the second man followed. Angrily shaking the gate as he climbed it, the big man climbed over the gate. As if puzzled by the problem of gate climbing, the fat, bandy-legged man watched him. He looked for a way of opening the gate, but in the dark did not succeed. Then, clumsily, making more of a job of it than necessary, he climbed over the gate. Bayoni, Moreno, Leary, and Kriegel disappeared across the roaring stream, stumbling and slipping uphill in the dousing rain. "Hey, Ace. That you, Fletch?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Alston just came in. It was 2 hours earlier by the clock in California. Hang on." Alston, Chambers, and Fletch went back a long way together. Alston had started his career as a prosecutor. When his children were born, he decided he needed to earn a better living than the state provided him. He tried being a defense attorney. He did make more money. He hated defending people he knew to be criminals. "The difference is," he told Fletch at the time, "between telling the truth and distorting truth, making up a barely palatable lie to fit the facts, to seed reasonable doubt." "Not your bowl of minestrone, huh?" "I hate my clients. I think most of them should be hung, drawn, and quartered. How can I spend my life hating the people I work with, spend all my time with, my clients?" "Many do. It's like being a beautician in the land of the ugly." "There's always divorce law," Fletch said. "Personally, I can tell you how profitable that is." "I want to put all my clients in prison." "Then go back to putting them in prison," Fletch said. "You were good at it." So after time, with periodic objective advice, encouragement, and a few legitimate political dollars from Fletch, Alston Chambers had risen to the position of district attorney. Alston came on the phone. "Can't you let me get home, let me take off my coat, smell the stew pot, and pat the cat before making me answer the phone?" "You're late. You must have slowed and smirked going by the county jail again. Did any of the citizens you've jugged wave at you as you went by? I know how you love that." "Are you in a factory?" "No, why?" "What's that noise?" "Rain on an aluminum roof. Hard rain. I'm in the smokehouse." "Why? Are you going to talk dirty to me?" "Probably." Fletch had taken the cellular phone from the station wagon into the smokehouse. Frequently, the phone did not work in the deep valley of the farm. Despite the storm, the phone was working well. Through the open door of the unlit smokehouse, he could keep his eye on much of the farm. Probably he would be able to see Jack returning to the house, his dark shape moving along the whiteboard fence. Hoping the phone would not leak, especially that his conversation would not be heard on some police frequency, he had finger-punched out Alston's home number in California. "Hey, Alston," Fletch said, "listen." "Never mind, take your time," Alston said. "We're just having duck curacao for dinner. There's little onions." "I have a son." For a moment, Fletch thought the line went dead. It hadn't. "I suppose you do," Alston said. "I never thought about it. A new son or an old son?" "An old son." "How old?" "You remember Crystal Faoni?" "I remember your talking about her. That was 2 million years ago. 2.5. "You were never romantically involved with Crystal whatever is her name, were you? She's the one female in your life I thought you weren't romantically involved with." "She had a son and never told me." "How did she do that? Just by standing close to you? Did she catch your fumes or something?" "We bumped into each other once."
"Wasn't she impossibly obese?"
"Corpulent."
"You could reach?"
"Apparently."
"Good for you. As I remember, you loved her mind, her wit, her good spirits."
"I guess she saw something in me, too."
"What?"
"God knows."
"You mean she wanted a kid by you? She set you up?"
"I could have resisted."
"Oh, not you."
"I acted without forethought."
"What, did she sneak into your bed one night when you were half drunk or something?"
"She tumbled out of my shower. Actually, she landed on me."
"Ah," Alston said, "the oppressed male."
"I've wondered why I haven't heard from her in years."
"Legally?"
"I don't care about legally."
"You never do. Where is this scion of sin?"
"Here."
"Where?"
"At the farm."
"And he's locked you in the smokehouse in the pouring rain?"
"Not quite."
"What does he look like?"
"I haven't really seen him yet. He's so dirty."
"You mean dirty as in so dirty you can't even see what he looks like?"
"He came through this storm," Fletch said, "under adverse circumstances. Over hill and dale, as it were. Through woods and streams."
"Does he have a brain?"
Fletch considered.
"I think he knows what parthenogenesis means."
"Tell me what it means."
"It means a world without lawyers." "Fletch, is this kid making some claims upon you?"
"I don't know his intentions."
"Because besides checking such things as dates, if you can remember, if you have any records, there are such things as DNA tests."
"I don't think there's much doubt about it. Crystal wasn't exactly the town pump."
"I suppose not." I remember realizing belatedly that Crystal probably had done this on purpose. Used you as stud. Ah, we only came together in this way once, Alston. Some guys have all the luck. Now that I think about it, I wonder just how many kids you do have. Probably half the younger generation are your brats. God, they all act like you. As soon as I figure out where they are and what they're thinking and doing, damn all if they're not thinking and doing something else. Be nice. Why? Because I'm about to ask you for two favors. The situation here is a little difficult. Reheated roast duck is never as good, Alston said. The house phones are dead. I'm making this call on the cellular phone on the sly, you see. In the smokehouse in the pouring rain. You mean the kid hasn't really locked you out of your house yet? I can't make many calls, any other calls for right now. I'm depending upon you, Alston. For what? To find out where Crystal is. Her last name is spelled F-A-O-N-I. You want to send flowers? A little late. Address, phone number. Can't you get that from the kid? Will you do it for me, please? After I don't let this duck go to waste. You know she never married? I infer she hasn't. Where was she the last time you knew where she was? Boston. When was that? 20 years ago? 20 years plus. Great. By now she could be a man named McGillicuddy. Also, there was a jailbreak earlier today, last night, yesterday, from the federal prison in Thomaston, Kentucky. Well, that's not too far from you. Not too far. 4 escapees. What do you want to know? Everything. Know anything at all about them? Their crimes. Murder, attempted murder, kidnapping, and drug violations of some sort. Sweethearts. I know their names. But you're not going to tell me. What is this, some kind of a pass-fail test? Leary, Moreno, and Kriegel. That's 3. John Fletcher Faoni. What? Spelled F-A-O-N-I. Jesus Christ, you poor sod. To think a moment ago I was envying you. You discover you have a son, a big bundle of joy, an escapee from a federal pen, a convicted... what? He says attempted murder is his particular indiscretion. Attempted murderer. The truth is not for us to know just now, Fletch quoted. So are the mysteries well-founded. Fletch, are these guys around your place now? Are they all there? Where's Carrie? Upstairs, in bed, sleeping peacefully. I know the Attorney General of... Please, Alston, just make the calls I asked you to make. Cops are here, too, sort of. This just happens to be a rather big band I'm trying to conduct at this moment. Too much bass, maybe. Yeah, rather heavy in the rhythm section, too. I can feel it in my ears from here. Shit, my blood pressure. I mean pressure. Look what you're doing to me. You're on that godforsaken farm a million miles from who cares in a raging storm, crawling with escapees from a federal penitentiary, real hard-timers, Carrie snoring in her bed. Carrie doesn't snore. She wouldn't. She's the quietest damn sleeper. Your phones are off? Do these guys cut the lines? Yes. Next time I ask you why you're calling me from the smokehouse in the pouring rain, will you give me a straight answer? I did. You just needed a little background. Fletch did see Jack moving, head down along this side of the home pasture fence toward the front of the house. I believe one of these guys is my son, Alston. I believe he led these other guys out of their way to come here. I want to know why, okay? So please just do as I ask. And don't try to call me. You'll just add timpani to the bass. I'll call you back when I can. Enjoy your duck. Yeah, Alston said. Duck you. Hi, Mr. Fletcher. Deputy Sheriff Will Sanborn leaned his wet head and shoulders through the back doorway of the house. His feet were still in the mud outside. Hey, Will. In the kitchen, Fletch was filling 2 mugs with coffee. You look wetter than the minute you were born. Who's that guy moving around in your library? There's no guy in my library. A kid. Oh, you mean Jack? You want cream or sugar? Black, please. That's my son, Jack. Leaning from outside into the back hallway, Will wrinkled his face. Your son, Jack? You never met Jack? Never knew you had a son. You didn't? Well, I'll be a hoppy toad. I thought everybody knew my son Jack. Who's with you? Michael? Come on in, Michael. Where's Carrie?
Upstairs in bed.
Anyone else here?
Fletch handed Will the hot coffee at the back door.
So you guys cased the place before entering. Pretty smart. I appreciate it. Come in. We'll mess up your floor. It's brick. Clean's easy.
In the small, dark back hall, the two deputies looked very large in their slickers and hats. Leaving their slickers on, they put the wet hats on the wall pegs. Removing their boots together in that small space, they looked like two bears having their first dancing lesson.
Oops!
Will spilled some of his coffee on the floor. In gray hunting socks, they stepped into the kitchen. Fletch handed Michael a mug of coffee.
Thanks.
You're here for the Jeep, Fletch said.
Yeah.
Will blew on his hot coffee before sipping it.
Sheriff said to run it over to your place first.
These guys are here somewhere, Michael said.
For sure.
The wet grass will be right slippery, Fletch said.
Don't try too tight a turn in that Jeep, especially in four-wheel drive, especially if you've got any speed up. Don't get yourselves in too great an angle on the hillsides.
Michael said, You sound like my father. At 21, Michael had just been released from the army. He had hoped for a 20-year career as his father had had.
Is that bad? Fletch asked.
Michael said, No. Then he laughed into his coffee cup. Give me a break.
You might check the barns, Fletch said.
Will said,
We'll check the barns.
Both had six-battery, head-cracking flashlights sticking out of their slickers' pockets. Will stared at the .38 in the waistband of Fletch's jeans.
There are four of these guys? Fletch asked.
Three,
Michael said.
Three? The sheriff said four.
Michael shrugged.
Maybe.
When did they escape?
Sometime during the night, Will answered. Probably early last night.
Anybody hurt?
I don't think so.
How'd they get out?
Don't know, Will answered. It's a maximum security prison, isn't it?
He asked Michael. I thought so. These guys are murderers.
Yeah.
Frowning, Will looked into his coffee cup.
We've been told to shoot on sight.
Sorry, Fletch said. Protect yourselves.
Will said, Sheriff told us to check every room in your house, Mr. Fletcher. I guess even the room where Miss Carrie's asleep.
He looked at Fletcher's handgun again.
Idea is they could have Miss Carrie hostage in one room while you're sweet-talking us.
Me? Sweet-talk anybody? Fletch grinned. I understand.
One of us will stay downstairs while the other goes upstairs with you.
Will rinsed his empty coffee mug in the sink.
Sure. Last time I was here, Will looked around, we were all watching Atlanta play San Francisco on your big screen.
I've never been here, Michael said.
You got any of those Tharp paintings, Mr. Fletcher?
No, I guess I ran the price of them up too high for me to afford them.
Sheriff ate two full-size pizzas while watching the game, Will said.
Supremes.
Never thought anybody could do that.
He was nervous, Fletch said. He bet on San Francisco.
Michael put mock horror on his face. You guys were gambling?
It's all right, Michael, Fletch said. It was rigged.
Carrie was working the odds. You know how diplomatic she is. The sheriff was the only one who lost.
He made up for it in the pizza he ate, Will said.
Turning on and off lights again, Fletch led them from room to room on the ground floor. The deputies checked closets, bathrooms. Fletch heard the sounds of a guitar being tuned. They came to the study. Under the bright lights of the study's chandelier on the big blue leather divan sat John Fletcher Faoni. His hair was dry and combed. He was clean-shaven. He was as clean as a fresh bar of soap. Barefoot, he wore shorts and a T-shirt. He was suntanned. He looked up from the acoustic guitar he was tuning. To the deputies following Fletch into the study, looking up, smiling, Jack said, Ha!
I'll be damned, Fletch said. You clean up pretty good for a frog. Just maybe pigs can fly.
Louder, he said, This is my son, Jack Fletcher. Deputies Will Sanborn and Michael Jackson, Jack. Putting aside the guitar, Jack stood and shook hands with the deputies.
How are you guys doing?
Jack asked.
Oh, my God, Fletch muttered. A southern prince yet.
How come I don't know you?
Michael asked. We're the same age.
Didn't go to school here, Jack answered.
I don't know you either, Will said. I never seen you around.
Jack hitched up his shorts slightly. That's because my daddy's just a little bit ashamed of me. But the word daddy, Fletch felt like an electric shock hit his lower spine. He took exception to my being born plum ignorant and kept me away from him all my grown-up years in one school after another. He was raised by his mother, Fletch said. Still, Michael said. Who's your mama? Will's question wasn't as suspicious as it was country curious. The next question, with any pretext, would be, she got kin around here? Her name's Crystal, Jack said. She's in the radio business up north. Jack had eliminated the pretext. His mother was a Yankee, named Crystal. She's a career woman, Fletch said. Will said to Fletch, his mama got custody of him? Fletch said, yeah. Will shook his head sadly. Fletch remembered Will had lost custody of his two children in a divorce. His wife had claimed that because of his hours, because of the danger of his job, because he wore a gun, Will was not as appropriate a parent as she. How long are you going to be here? Michael asked. You got a license. I'll show you where some of the best fishing holes are. I'm driving him down to the University of North Alabama in the morning, Fletch said. Jack threw a glance at him. Good, Michael said. You'll be home some weekends. We'll work something out. Call me when you know you're coming home. Your daddy knows my daddy. He looked at Jack's narrow waist, flat stomach. You drink beer? The fish like water? What kind of beer you like? The wet, cold kind, Jack laughed. Michael shook Jack's hand again. We'll work something out. I'll stay downstairs, Will said, while you two check out the rooms upstairs. Michael said to Jack, there's some escaped convicts around here. I know, Jack laughed. At first I thought Daddy got the pistol out because my head was spending too much time in the refrigerator. He just arrived, Fletch said, hungry. Leading Michael up the stairs, Fletch heard Will in the study say to Jack, I never even noticed a picture of you in this house. Jack said, well, my mama and my daddy haven't had anything to do with each other for a long time now. One of those things. She needed my loyalty, you know? Fletch waited in the front hall upstairs while Michael checked the attics, the snuggery, the other bedroom. Miss Carrie in there? Michael whispered. Yes. I'll just crack open the door. He leaned into the master bedroom. After he closed the door, he grinned. Is she dead? She sleeps quietly. Does she stop breathing? She doesn't work at it. When they went downstairs, Will asked, everything okay? Right as a whiff of magnolia on a summer's breeze, Michael said. Jack shook hands with both deputies again. Happy hunting, he said cheerily. Fletch led the deputies back to the kitchen. As they were putting on their boots, Will said, now, Mr. Fletcher, if they're on the farm and watching, they know we've been here. As we patrol the farm, we just might squeeze them into the house, you know what I mean? Yes. You all are probably in more danger now than if we were never here. I understand. Michael opened the back door. It was still raining hard. Don't you hesitate to use that pistol. Fletch thought of the charming, healthy, beautiful young man in his study. His son. I won't. Thanks for the coffee, Michael said. Y'all come back, Fletch said. You hear? Chapter 4. Nice place you have here. Jack cleared the coffee table of albums when he saw Fletch enter with a tray. I could have come to the kitchen or wherever. Fletch put the tray on the coffee table. On the tray were the warm tuna fish sandwiches, a glass, and a half gallon of milk. I frequently eat in here. How old is it? The tuna fish? Oh, probably 10-12 years old. The house. Antebellum. Here, that means before the Civil War, not the Revolutionary War, that right? The Brothers' War, Fletch said. The war between the states. He sat in a wing chair. You should know. You just oozed Southern like someone running for the office of county dog catcher.
Not really.
Jack nearly was inhaling his sandwiches and milk.
Just trying to be nice to your friends,
Jack grinned. His daddy knows my daddy. The electric shock to Fletch's lower spine at Jack's use of the word daddy was just as strong this time. "So, tell me," Fletch asked, "whom did you attempt to murder?"
"A cop."
"Oh, God!"
"No, a cop."
"Son of a bitch."
"That's no way to speak of Crystal.
It's a wonder you're still walking around."
"I didn't actually kill her."
"A lady cop?"
"I didn't stop to ask."
"You just tried to kill her."
"I tried."
"And what was your doubtlessly magnificent reason for this criminal behavior?"
"She was bothering a friend of mine."
"Where was this?"
"Louisville, Kentucky."
"What were you doing in Louisville, Kentucky?"
"Heading south."
"Where south? Here?"
"Maybe. Nashville, anyway."
Fletch looked at the guitar Jack had found in the guest bedroom. It had been a house present from a country music star who had needed to stay at the farm a while. It had the star's name on it. Since it had been left, no one had played it. The guitar had become an ornament, a prized, dusted ornament.
"Are you musical?"
Jack shrugged.
"We wanted to find that out."
"Who's we?"
"My friend and I. He plays keyboard."
"Where is he now?"
"Kentucky State Pen."
"And how and why was this woman cop bothering your friend?"
"It had to do with the car he was driving."
"What about it?"
"It was stolen."
Jack smiled.
"A pink Cadillac convertible, vintage."
"Wonderful." Fletch shook his head.
"You wanted your pink Cadillac convertible before you even got to Nashville."
"Something like that, arriving in style."
"Some style. So what happened?"
"I shot at her, just to discourage her from making the arrest, arresting my friend. I didn't need to do anything. I wasn't even in the car at the moment. I could have disappeared, gotten away, saved my own ass. I didn't realize other cops had snuck up behind me. They hit me over the head. Bastards. I was convicted of the attempted murder of a police officer. Would you believe that?"
"Yes."
"People don't appreciate loyalty. Police officers have every reason to discourage such behavior."
"Sure, still, it just happened. In the heat of the moment, you had to have been there."
"No, thanks. You shot at her with what?"
"A pistol, a .32.
"Why would you even have such a thing?"
"We had it. You know, traveling. We intended to sleep out at night."
"You weren't in the car, but you had the gun on you."
"I had put it under my shirt. I was going into a store."
"Did you intend to rob the store?"
"No. Who'd try to rob a supermarket?"
"Then why were you carrying the gun?"
"It felt good against my skin."
"You have trouble getting it up, son?"
Jack's eyebrows raised.
"No.
I don't see why you were carrying the gun."
Jack said, "You've got a gun stuck into your jeans right now."
"By order of the sheriff."
Fletch got up and went to the open French doors.